welcome to our show today as we move another day closer to the weekend. It's 9 o'clock. I'm Rick Howe with you until 12:30 this afternoon, and here's what we've got coming up on the show for you today. We'll talk with Halifax privacy lawyer David Fraser, who's got some concerns about the province's new Intimate Images and Cyber Protection Act. He says basically it's too complicated. It could end up costing people thousands of dollars in legal fees. He'll join me later this hour. Deputy Mayor Wayne Mason will share some thoughts on a possible stadium and CFL franchise as City Council prepares for a public discussion on the issue next week. Mayor Mike Savage standing by. He'll join us in just a moment on this very same issue. And over the 11 o'clock hour this morning, we'll do a survey. Yes or no, do you support a taxpayer's role in a possible CFL franchise and stadium for Halifax? Sports commentator Alex Walling will join me with his thoughts. I want to hear yours. Again, that's between 11 and 12 this morning. Coming up next hour, we've got some, an open hour for you between 10 and 11 o'clock this morning, where, as always, anything goes. And after the news at noon today, historian and archaeologist David Jones returns with another Nova Scotia history lesson for us. Coming up to 9:02, but first up this morning, give the public their say. That was the headline over a commentary in the Chronicle Herald yesterday that urges the city now to hold a public debate, reveal the sites under consideration for a stadium, speak more openly about what is being asked to do, and entertain questions from taxpayers about just how much this is going to cost. Hear, hear. Joining me on the phone this morning to start off our day today is the mayor of Halifax, Mike Savage. Mayor Savage, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm well, sir. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
I imagine you read the editorial yesterday in the Chronicle Herald.
Well, after you called and mentioned it, yes, I did, yeah.
Okay, and it says basically it's time the city sponsored a public debate, revealed the specific sites under consideration, spoke a lot more openly about what it is being asked to do, and entertained questions from taxpayers about just how much this will cost. What can you tell us about the latest in regards to a potential stadium?
Well, first of all, they're about a number of months late to the game in that. That's what I've been saying for a long time. There is a difference in this proposal versus other proposals for a stadium, which is this is a private sector-led proposal. They're under no obligation to disclose confidential information. We've been encouraging the consortium, which I think is a good one, that as soon as we can, we need to get some idea out to the public of where they want to put this, what it's going to cost, what the city's role would be, what the province's role might be, what the private sector role might be. But there are some... You know, it's not like the city is going out and saying, we want to have a stadium and these are the parameters that we want to have it under. We're going to give the land, do this, do that. This is a private proposal that's come to us. And, you know, we've tried to manage it in a very open way with the group that's proposing this. But they have some private obligations to themselves and, you know, to the investors in this. But we have said, we've got to get this out in the public. Let's have a discussion. You know, and I think there's a lot of people out there that want a stadium, you know, almost at any cost, and there are people out there that are opposed to a stadium under any circumstance, but I think there's a lot of people who want to have a look at this and say, you know, does this make sense for the municipality? And if it does, you know, let's move forward with it.
Last I heard from a couple of councillors on Monday, there had been no official request by the group behind this bid, but unofficially, surely you must know by now what it is they want from the city.
No, we don't. We don't know exactly what they want. You know, they've talked to us in general terms of what they see in terms of making a stadium work, and they clearly think that, you know, Halifax HRM is a municipality that's doing very well. We're on the move. We're getting attention that we haven't gotten in a long time. I don't think we've ever had a private proposal for a stadium being worked on here in Halifax. I think it's a positive sign that they want to do that. Clearly, the municipality and the province would have to, you know, pay for this in some way, but there's also different ways that we can look at it. And I think also that there's a proposal that even not just sort of organizing the bid, but actually investing in the bid could be a private sector play here as well. But those are all things that we have to see the numbers on. Even me as mayor, I have a general sense of what they want to spend on it. I have a general sense of the locations that they're looking at. But there's a lot of stuff to be done between now and making a decision as to whether or not this is really going to be a good thing for the municipality. I'm hopeful, but we just don't know the numbers.
Councillor Jim Outhit is surveying his constituents in Bedford on this issue, and he says, quote, here is what I believe the ask will ultimately be from the group if council votes to enter discussion. And he goes on to say that the group will request that they pay no property tax for 20 to 25 years for the stadium or the surrounding development. Is that the request, do you think?
I don't know. We don't know that. It could be. It could be that I think the model that they're looking at, and this is no secret, Rick, you and I have talked about this for 5 years, is the Ottawa model, the Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group, OSEG, in Ottawa, that managed a process where they revitalized Lansdowne Park, but as part of a retail commercial development in the area, which reduced the risk to the municipality and the cost to the municipality, certainly in terms of upfront dollars. So, you know, council may look at this when we get the numbers, and all we're asking right now from council next week is, you know, should we start getting into some deep dive on numbers with the group and see if it makes sense. So, and when the numbers eventually come back, we're going to look at it and say, what's it cost? And, you know, is it a good investment? You know, we invest money all the time. We spent 40-some million on a four-pad in Dartmouth. We're doing 25 million to revitalize the Sportsplex. We spent millions on the pavilion for the Oval. We obviously invest money all the time in roads and in services to our citizens. And the only two times really that we look at a return on investment are things like a convention center and a stadium. And that's fair. You know, you need to make sure that it makes sense for the municipality. But all the things that we spend money on are designed to build the kind of community where people want to live, where it enhances our ability to attract people and attract companies. And that's, I think, the screen that we need to look at with this as well.
But are you okay with a potential 20-25-year tax break for this group?
I have to see what the numbers are. I mean, what else? We build all kinds of infrastructure, that municipal infrastructure, that we don't get tax on the four-pad, we don't get tax on the library, we don't get tax on a whole host of things. We don't even get taxed, I don't think, on the Discovery Center. So it all has to be part of the overall mix to sort of say, this is what it will cost to do this. These are the benefits it will bring. Is it worth it? And I think we have to do a deep dive. I don't know what the total cost. I've heard $200 million is the number, but, can you build a stadium for $150, $140? What are the sacrifices that you make? I don't think you can look at the stadium that we looked at a number of years ago, which was a $60 million stadium with 14,000 seats. I don't think we need that, especially now that we have the Wanderers Grounds, which is going to be a fabulous facility for the municipality for sort of mid-sized sports. So I think there's a lot of factors. It could be good, but as I say, we need to look at the numbers.
Your deputy mayor, Wei Mason, says that he's in favor of a so-called community stadium rather than a large 25,000-seat facility. You just kind of sort of rejected that premise just a moment ago, did you not?
Pardon me?
Again, Wei Mason suggesting a community stadium rather than a large 25,000-seat facility, but didn't you just moments ago reject that premise?
Did I?
Yeah. Well, I got that's the sense I got, that we don't need a smaller stadium like we were talking about a couple of years back. I think the CFL requires, does it not, a minimum seating of something in the vicinity of 20 to 25,000?
Yes. I think if you're looking at CFL, I think having the Wanderers Grounds fulfill sort of a community stadium. We have the opportunity to do the Canadian Professional Soccer, the Halifax Wanderers. You can do some events. We've got soccer and rugby that are going to be played there. I think that's a great facility for that. I don't think it precludes whether we have a larger stadium or not. I think it does show that there's a great deal of excitement. I was at the rugby game that they had, Canada and the U.S., and we didn't do very well in the overall game, but the atmosphere was awesome up there. And, I don't know what a community stadium means to different people. We just have to figure out. There aren't that many cities of our size, certainly in Canada, that don't have a facility that can host large sporting events, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to have it. We just have to have a look and weigh the benefits and make a decision, talk to the folks, see what people have in mind. I really do think, though, that this is not a conversation just between those who love the idea of a stadium and those who hate the idea of a stadium. It has to be a broader discussion where we hear from people who look at sort of what's being offered and saying, does it make sense? I don't know. I haven't seen the numbers.
What's going to happen Tuesday then at council meeting? There's going to be, we're told, some kind of discussion. So give us a sense of how that discussion is going to go, or just what type of discussion it's going to be.
Well, I would never suggest to you that I know what council is going to discuss at a council meeting yet to be held. Sometimes I've been at council meetings and I don't know what was discussed. So, but the motion is a motion from Councillor Craig, which is that we direct staff to take a look with this group to go away and look at the numbers and bring back, the exact cost of what a stadium would be, the parameters of the stadium, so the council could then make a decision. So it's a It's a motion to enter into discussion with this group who've been doing this work privately, and then we can bring those things back for a public discussion.
It's my understanding they'd like to have a team in operation in the CFL by 2020 if they could. And I don't know if that's enough time for council to deal with this issue and get a stadium built in time for that. Give me a sense of whether that's a reasonable time frame or that's going to be pushed back a bit, perhaps.
Well, my sense is 2020 is very aggressive. I don't see that. I don't think we're going to have a stadium by 2020 under any circumstances. We're into 2018. You know, we're not going to have a decision, you know, in the next few months. It's going to take some time to work through these numbers and also, frankly, to see if there's any negotiation that the city needs to do to improve the numbers before we make a decision. The province has to decide if they're going to, you know, be part of this as well. I don't think the province is any more inclined to put a lot of money in up front than we are. Some of the councillors, I think, have sort of indicated they may be more interested in saying we'll put X number of dollars up as opposed to looking at a model where we pay for it over time from property tax revenues, for example, in the area, which is what traditionally they call a TIF, a tax increment financing. You can't just look at development in a certain area and say that it's all incremental to that development either. So a stadium may bring certain development, but it also may move development from somewhere else. That's not a net gain to the municipality. So that's why we need to start doing some, we need to look at what the numbers are and then say, you know, how does this serve the municipality's needs and does it?
And they've mentioned there's a story this week saying the ownership group is looking at two potential locations, Dartmouth Crossing and Bears Lake. What can you tell me about that? And is Shannon Park completely out of the picture now?
Well, you know, if we were building the stadium, we'd pick a spot. We're not building the stadium. We would have to be some kind of a partner in this when the group comes back. I mean, we could. I mean, where's the best place for a stadium, in my view? Shannon Park. The best place for anything, I think, large in HRM now is probably Shannon Park. Cogswell is 16 acres. The Shannon Park is 100 acres. It's on the water. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
If you ask me the ideal location, that's what I would tell you. But, you know, as the mayor and as the guardian of the public good here, my favorite location for a stadium is wherever the people who are prepared to make it happen decide that they want to put it. We're not giving them the land. It's not us that's saying put it here or put it there. What we're saying is if you have an idea, and I think clearly they do, do some work, bring it back to us, and then we decide if we pursue it. We're quite a ways away from making any kind of a definitive decision. But I think 2020 is I don't see that as a possibility.
The ownership group says it has entered discussions with city officials, obviously not with you and councillors. So who are they talking to?
Well, they've talked to the CAO. They've, in terms of getting some advice, I've met with them probably two or three times, my advice to them has been the same advice that I've made publicly, which is my own inclination is that we're not prepared to put a lot of capital. We have a lot of capital demands on the city in the coming years. Everything from a new police station to, we have to look at all kinds of different things that we need to invest in as a municipality. So my preference would be to say, if you're going to come back with a plan, come back with a plan that involves private sector investment as well as private sector expertise. We certainly know that nothing is free, and we're going to have to play a role. But if we can pay for our part of a stadium from offset future revenues that currently don't exist, I think that's something we have to look at. We just can't assume that all of those revenues are directly attributable to a stadium, so we have to do some sensitivity around that.
On a scale of 1 to 10 before I let you go, Mayor, what do you think the chances of this actually happening? How realistic is the possibility with a stadium and a franchise on a scale of 1 to 10?
No idea. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I'd say somewhere between 3 and 8.
Is that
specific enough?
Yeah, I guess.
It all depends on the numbers.
Yeah.
And we have to negotiate too. So I'm not. I don't believe that you just sort of can say as a council that we really want a stadium and we're going to make it happen. That's not a very good negotiating position. We have to make sure that this makes sense first of all for the municipality and for the citizens, that we have the right partners at the table, and that it could work. What I would say is what I've said to you many times, and you call me on this all the time, and I tell you the same thing. I'm optimistic. I'm impressed with the group, but we got to see the numbers, and we haven't seen them yet.
I appreciate your time, Mayor, as always. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Have a good one, sir.
Okay, Rick.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mayor Mike Savage with us here on a Thursday morning. 9:15 is the time right now. Coming up, We'll chat with Councillor Deputy Mayor and Councillor Wei Mason. He'll be here after 9:30 this morning. And then at 11, we're going to just open up the phone lines and let's talk specifically about the stadium and we'll gauge public support. Yes or no will be the question. Do you support a CFL franchise and a sports stadium here in the city? That's coming up between 11 and 12 this morning. And sports commentator Alex Walling will join me to help kickstart that conversation as well. Right now, though, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. Nine 19 is the time here this Thursday morning. The province's new Intimate Images and Cyber Protection Act is, well, too complicated and too costly, according to Halifax privacy lawyer David Fraser. He's with the law firm McInnes Cooper, and he joins me on the phone this morning to tell us a little bit more about this. Good morning, David.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How about yourself?
Very well, thank you.
Good. And I'm wondering here, okay, we brought in this new act, the Intimate Images and Cyber Protection Act, but it looks like there's all kinds of fees attached to this that it could end up costing individuals perhaps thousands of dollars. Is that the case?
It is, and this is one of the concerns that I voiced when the legislation was introduced. So the if somebody wants a remedy under the legislation, they have to go to the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia, which is a relatively complicated and procedure-filled place. And any time you start an application or an action in the Supreme Court, you have to pay a filing fee. Now, if you can't afford it, you can make an application to have those fees waived, but the default is going to be about $250. And then there's a whole lot of procedural things. For example, you have to have a notice of application. You have to have an affidavit, which is a sworn statement that tells your story. You have to hire a process server to serve that on the person who you believe is cyberbullying you. And then you have to write a brief, kind of your written argument to be presented in front of a judge. And then even once you get into court, which should take about 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that, then you don't really have the opportunity to tell your story in your own words because your affidavit is a written statement of your story. Now, you can be cross-examined on it by the other side. And so I think overall it's too complicated and too cumbersome. Now, the previous law was, and this was one of the defects that made it invalid, the previous law, you could just go to a justice of the peace the same day, you tell your story, and you could walk out of there with an order. The problem with that was that the other side didn't get notice, and so they didn't have a chance to tell their story. Now, that could be fixed and still do it in front of a justice of the peace or do it in the provincial court, perhaps similar to the way that peace bonds are now done, but speed up the timelines and so that it's a bit more user-friendly. So I would expect that reading the guide that's been put out by the CyberScan unit and the government, that there's going to be a whole lot of people who are going to be scratching their heads thinking this is one heck of a process. And if they hire a lawyer, that's going to be even more expensive. Certainly, I know the rules of the Supreme Court. I know how things work, and I know all that sort of stuff. But lawyers ain't cheap. And so I think that this creates a significant impediment and ultimately an access to justice issue.
Well, no question. I mean, if I'm, you know, as myself want to make a complaint here and I look at all of the red tape, I'll call it, and fees that I got to go through, that might dissuade me from following suit on this.
Well, I think it will for many people. And there's other issues. For example, young people can't proceed on their own. Their parents have to bring the application for them. And when you're dealing with a situation involving intimate images, I can certainly imagine a circumstance that a young person might not want to be as open with their parents as they would need to be in order to have their parents take their case forward for them.
Mm. Do you think this was a deliberate attempt to and discourage people from taking advantage of the provisions in this act?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think that the folks who wrote it within the government intended for this to fail. I'm concerned that it might, or at least it won't be as effective as it should be because of these sorts of things. The judge who struck down the Cyber Safety Act initially certainly had some very strong things to say about the previous legislation. And I'm concerned the pendulum might have swung a little bit too far. And ultimately, that's going to be to the disadvantage of victims who are seeking a remedy.
So the CyberScan unit, what role do they play in all of this now? I'm reading here that perhaps the CyberScan unit can help people to try to resolve situations as well as advising people about the act. Is the CyberScan unit something we can go to try to sift through the requirements of this act?
Oh, I think so. Certainly, if I were a victim of cyberbullying, that would be the first call that I would make. because hopefully they'll have resources and assistance for individuals to help them fill out the paperwork, for example. They obviously can't offer legal advice. And I gather the Legal Information Society of Nova Scotia has also will be helping with these sorts of things. So perhaps there will be tools to help smooth the way. We will see when the first applications start coming through, and it will be interesting to find out how long it will take before that happens.
But you mentioned you raised this during the law amendments process, and obviously they didn't listen.
Yeah, and I also wrote a letter to the Minister of Justice because many of the things could be fixed in regulations. The law allows the Minister of Justice and the Cabinet to create regulations that deal with all sorts of things related to the process of an application or a claim. And I don't think that they certainly did not do that. There are some guidance from the court and some specific guidance related to, they're called practice directives, that help smooth the way, but don't do it entirely. They at least allow or provide some additional certainty. But ultimately, I think that there are too many roadblocks and perhaps too many speed bumps on the way for people to get into court and have their day in court and have their say.
But I understand there is also a review process, 3 years?
There is. So after 3 years, there will be a review, and that will be an opportunity for us to look back and see, has this done what it was intended to do? What do the stats look like from the cyber scan unit? How many complaints did they have? How many were resolved to the satisfaction of individuals? How many times did people have to go to court? And what was that process like? And I would hope that individuals who in the next 3 years will have gone through this process would be able to speak to what that process was like for them.
Yeah. The previous act, of course, struck down by the courts, and now this new Intimate Images and Cyber Protection Act. And aside from your concerns in regards to fees and those things that you've mentioned, is this act, did they get it right this time?
Well, certainly, I think that they fixed the issues related to freedom of expression, which were some of the most significant issues in the previous statute. I don't think there's any doubt. Some might even say it's gone too far because it requires that somebody have a malevolent or malicious intent in engaging in mischief online. And it also specifically deals and deals somewhat differently with intimate images, the non-consensual distribution of intimate images. And that's relatively streamlined, and that follows in the footsteps of a couple other provinces that have passed legislation specifically dealing with intimate images. And so it will be interesting to see how this all plays out. In a way, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that people are able to get access to justice in the way that they want in order to deal with these sorts of things. But we'll see, and we'll have 3 years to kind of collect the experience and figure out whether we're going to have to go back to the drawing board again.
Indeed. David, appreciate your time as always. Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye-bye. Bye. David Fraser, a privacy lawyer with McGinnis Cooper, and his take on this new Intimate Images and Cyber Protection Act basically says it's too complicated and it could force people to spend thousands of dollars for legal help and such. Coming up to 9:27 here, we're going to break in a moment for a news update. On the other side of the news, the deputy mayor of Halifax, Wayne Mason, will join us, and we'll hear his take on this stadium issue. He posted a notice to his constituents on his blog this week, and he says basically that, let me read it. It says here, my support for a possible stadium proposal is limited to can the proponents build a stadium for the same contribution by HRM as the cost to build a community stadium that we had hazy plans to build ourselves. If so, he says, sign a community access plan and $20 to $35 million is the range of support. That's part of what Wayne Mason had to say on his blog. We'll hear what he says in person when he joins me coming up after the news. And the news is coming up next. Coming up now to 9:33 here on this Thursday morning. Hi there, welcome back to the show. I'm Rick Howe with you until 12:30 this afternoon. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Arthur Irwin. Arthur is with Irwin Energy Consulting Services here in Halifax. He wrote a letter to the editor in the Herald the other day talking about unqualified installers, talking about proper insulation installations. And basically, he's saying that Those who aren't certified in their specific trades, and this is more than just installation or insulation install. He's talking about electricians, plumbers, refrigeration technicians, and so on. He says those not certified in their specific trades should not be allowed into homes. And we'll hear more from Arthur Irwin on this issue coming up later in the half hour. We've got an open hour for you next hour between 10 and 11, where, as always, anything goes. And there's lots we could get into this morning. We'll do a survey between 11 and 12. Find out whether or not the people of this city support a CFL franchise and a sports stadium. Simple question between 11 and 12, yes or no. And sports commentator Alex Wall will join me to kickstart the conversation. I'd hope to hear from you as we, again, City Council prepares to discuss this issue at Tuesday's meeting next week. We'll hear what the people of Halifax have to say about support or not for a CFL stadium. That's between 11 and 12. And historian and archaeologist David Jones is back this afternoon with another Nova Scotia history lesson for us. 9:34 is the time right now. Well, we heard from the mayor earlier this hour on the stadium issue. And again, after 11 this morning, we'll open up our phone lines to hear just how much support there is or isn't for a stadium and a CFL franchise in this city. Deputy Mayor Wade Mason says that he has what he calls limited support for a stadium proposal. And he joins me on the phone this morning to tell us more. Mayor Wade, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you doing, Rick?
I am doing fine, Deputy Mayor. And I'm just reading a story here that says that you are in favor of a so-called community stadium rather than a large 25,000-seat facility. Is that the case?
No.
All right. Explain then, please.
So what my blog says is that we have been considering building that community stadium, you know, something smaller than CFL for some time. And both in our long-term capital strategy and in the current capital budget, the 10-year outlook, we have, you know, notional amounts of $20 to $35 million being thrown around for the idea of building a community stadium. So, you know, something more like what Moncton built, not CFL ready. And so what I'm saying is we have a private operator that wants to potentially build a stadium and a development next door, and that's fine. And they may be looking for a contribution, and that's fine. But I would limit the contribution to around what we were going to spend anyway. Basically, what they're doing is they're saying, look, man, like, you guys are going to build a stadium. We want to build a bigger stadium. If you give us the money you were going to spend on the smaller stadium, we can put it in ours, and that can help us get it done. And as long as we have a community access agreement like they have in other cities, I think that that's a good model.
But it would still be, again, about a 25,000-seat stadium, possibly.
Well, it's whatever the private operator wants. Now, what I've said to them and is I think they should build 17, 18,000 seats like McGill Stadium was when Alouettes moved there from the Big O. That they shouldn't go all the way to 25. They should leave, do the end zones on one side of the field and leave the other side until they've proven and the access and they're sold out for a couple of seasons. I think they want to go big and go all the way to 25. It's their call, because the big thing that we keep getting calls about is, and emails is, how big is it? Where's it going to go? And the whole point here is, I don't know, and it's not mine to say, because it's a private development. We're not building a stadium. We're not operating a stadium. That's not what's on the table, unlike all the past discussions, right? It was, in the past, it was going to be more like the Regina model, where we would build a stadium and we would own it, and it would cost us a lot of money. I don't want to do that. I would rather look at some of the models you see, the very few models you see in the United States, where it's a private operator and there's limited investment at the front end when it's being built.
Yeah, and I believe the CFL, though, has a minimum seating requirement that is in the 20,000 range for a football stadium, number one. And Tim Outhit is suggesting, and he says that here's what he believes the ask will be from the group, and he talks about a potential break on property taxes for 20 to 25 years. Are you okay with that, Wade?
Well, I was listening to you talk to the mayor earlier, and the truth is that no entertainment or sports facility in the city pays property tax right now. Neptune doesn't pay property tax. Obviously, municipally owned facilities don't pay property tax. Like, that is a standard operating for every municipality in the world, that a large entertainment facility almost always gets full or almost full tax waiver. So that doesn't worry me, because unlike giving a tax waiver on an apartment building or an office tower, either you're not getting taxes because there's no stadium, or you're not getting taxes because you get a waiver to a stadium. But I don't know anywhere where a stadium is paying taxes, property tax. So that doesn't bother me. Neptune doesn't pay taxes, right? Lots of small theaters. The difference between Neptune and a CFL stadium, though, is that the CFL stadium is proposed to be public. Everybody else who has a tax break, because of the way the law is in Nova Scotia, is a not-for-profit. So that would require some discussion with the province, but I'm not against that in principle. The issue is more the tax increment financing and the and how much money are we willing to spend.
And
20 to 35 million, maybe. 100 million, not a chance.
Yeah, and we're looking at the, again, we don't know the specific cost of a stadium, but somewhere in the $200 million range. So you're suggesting any city money would be limited to that 25 to 35 million.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't, you know, everybody who knows me, your listeners probably suspect I'm not the biggest sports guy in the world, but my former professor, Gord Fullerton at St. Mary's, who is a sports guy, made some comments on my Facebook page, and he said, have a look at the MetLife Stadium and the Gillette Stadium. And that's the model that I think we want to follow. Those are NFL stadiums. In the case of MetLife, the New York State put some, or Massachusetts, state of Massachusetts put some money into it at the front end. A substantial amount of money, you know, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, because it's one of the biggest facilities going. And then in the other case, they built the stadium on Port Authority land that was donated, but the entire construction was built with private money. So, and then they're operated. The big thing is, I don't want to be on the hook for operating, right? If they think 25 to 50 events can happen and only 10 or 11 of them are CFL games, or 9 or 11 of them are CFL games, and then that doesn't work out the way they want, I don't want the city to be on the hook for that. That's operating. I want them to own the facility. I want us to walk away. But given a modest amount based on money we were probably going to spend anyway, that's reasonable to me.
Yeah, but you also write in your blog to your constituents, you say, quote, given stadium economics, not sure how private can bridge the remaining $150 to $175 million, even with provincial participation.
Yep.
So you seem to be kind of pessimistic, I guess, about the outcome here.
Well, I mean, if they need $100 million from us and $100 million from the province, I don't think it's going to get built, right? If they can do it with 35, 40 million, 20 million from us, whatever it turns into that we can justify based on our future outlook, which is what the staff report will look at, and if the province is willing to come on board, which so far they have in the past, Stephen McNeil said he would not fund a stadium, then possibly it could happen. But it's going to be hard to get there for them, I think.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Sorry. The bigger issue is which the mayor touched on a bit and others have touched on, is this tax increment financing model. So some folks in the community believe that if you allowed them to build several hundred thousand square feet of residential around the site and you do a kind of a Lansdowne model, that you could give them all the taxes the city would have gotten. And that could go toward them and funding the stadium, right? Because you're creating money where there wouldn't have been money if it hadn't been built. But the problem to me in a small market like Halifax is that if we do that, it's not actually going to create new development. It's going to capture development that was going to happen elsewhere in downtown or Sackville or Bears Lake or Dartmouth Crossing. And it's going to put it inside of an area where we're no longer getting the taxes for 10 or 20 years. So that's what tax increment financing is. And in a small market like us, the idea of giving all the tax lift and a substantial portion of all of the development that's going to happen in Halifax for a decade or more, I couldn't support that. Like, because that's not really new money. That's just deciding that a bunch of development happens somewhere and we're not going to tax it.
Yeah. 9:42 is the time right now. City Council expected to discuss this on next Tuesday's meeting. But if you don't have an official request yet from the ownership group, if you don't have a lot of the details yet, what's the discussion going to be about?
Well, the discussion, our staff, our CEO can't go off herring off on a big debate like this where we're going to start opening up our financials and talking to them and having a negotiation without council direction. There's nothing in the business plan that was approved by council and nothing in our strategic plan that was approved by council that says, oh yeah, go negotiate a CFL deal. So we're at the point that we have to have a public motion that would even enable Jacques and the CEO, Jacques Dubé, and our staff to go and have a formal discussion about how a deal could be structured and to also do the research and come back to council on what the risks and opportunities and how we could pay for it.
The Chronicle Herald editorial this week says, quote, it's time the city sponsored a public debate, revealed the specific sites under consideration, spoke a lot more openly about what it is being asked to do, and entertained questions from taxpayers about just how much this will cost. When are we going to get around to that, Wei?
Well, that's what made me laugh, is that I saw that editorial yesterday, and if the Herald actually dispatched a reporter to counsel from time to time, they would have known that Steve Craig made the notice of motion to do exactly what they're talking about 2 weeks ago. So good on the Herald. But yeah, we're having that discussion on Tuesday. Thanks for coming out. The only thing that's not going to happen is the location, because again, it's a private development. So these private operators are talking to large landowners about where it should go. We're not building it. They're building it. So they're going to talk to the Stevens Group, and they're going to talk to Dartmouth Crossing, and they're going to talk to a bank about phase two of Bears Lake and all the, you know, I'm not telling you anything that's in camera because there's only so many large sites around the city. You know, they're going to talk to Shannon Park. They're going to talk to all of them. And that's, it's whatever deal, because they're going to be carrying the can. It's whatever deal they can get.
Do you think that Shannon Park still might be an option?
Probably not. They're way down their planning process. And at this point, the land there is quite expensive because it's such high demand land. So it would add considerably to their costs. And the other thing is, you know, their proposal is they want to do a development around it. Shannon Park is doing a development. That's what they're doing. They're making money for the government of Canada by redeveloping that land. So they're already capturing the value from doing that development.
The city, sorry.
You know, they got to go into green. They got to go to territory where there's nothing planned right now.
Yeah. But the city is going to be, apparently, as part of, I guess, the request that hasn't been asked for yet, is the city's going to have to improve the transportation system, transit, to get to wherever the stadium. And they're looking, again, we're told, two locations now, Dartmouth Crossing and Bears Lake. Neither really great served by, I believe, transit. So the city's part of its response to this will be to improve transit. Are you okay with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel we don't do a good enough job as it is with express buses coming in and out during Mooseheads games, and I think that that's an operational issue that we can overcome. We can work with them on that, especially if they're going to put money on the table. A lot of municipalities get a per-ticket contribution, and then the ticket can get somebody, the ticket for the game gets somebody on the train or on the bus. The other issues about improving roads and whatnot, that's just how... That's how development works, right? Like when you build a new subdivision, the developer builds the roads. They have to make a cost contribution to Halifax Water. They have to put in any water and sewer on their site that they have to do to our standard. And they often have to make a contribution to the downstream cost to Halifax Water to improve the rest of the network they're connecting to. So like all that stuff gets worked out. I'm not super worried about that. You know, what I am worried about is I don't want them to make a proposal to be built way out where we don't have water, where we don't have sewer, where it would be contributing to growing the city in a way outside the regional plan. But Dartmouth Crossing and Bears Lake are both places that are under development right now, so it's I don't see those concerns.
Well, it'll be interesting debate Tuesday, and we'll watch with interest to see how this whole thing plays out in the coming weeks and months ahead, right?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, sure, I will probably get tickets and take my dad to the CFL if they come, but I'm not willing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to get there.
I appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, but bye-bye. City Councilor and Deputy Mayor Wei Mason with us here this Thursday morning, coming up to 9:46. And again, between 11 and 12 this morning, we want to hear your take on this. Yes or no, do you support a CFL franchise in a stadium here in Halifax? And sports commentator Alex Walling will join me to help kickstart our conversation, and we'll perhaps give city councilors an idea of support or not for a CFL team in a stadium here in Halifax. 9:46, our time right now. We'll be back with more right after this. (clears throat) 9:49 on this Thursday morning. Just reading here that the Board of the Nova Scotia Health Authority will decide today if it will open its regular meetings to the public. Imagine that. A group that makes serious and major decisions about our healthcare system meets in camera without any public being able to sit in. In fact, it doesn't even make its minutes publicly available. Well, they're going to decide today whether to change that policy. And how archaic is that? And again, we're in the 21st century here now. You know, this is the time of transparency and openness. And we've got the Nova Scotia Health Authority, the Halifax Water Commission, and some others that basically, you know, don't want any kind of public scrutiny about what they're doing. So, I mean, I encourage the Nova Scotia Health Authority Board that meets today to make that decision and open up their meetings to the public and make the minutes publicly available either. What an outrage. 9:50 is the time right now. Well, a Halifax energy consultant is warning homeowners about unqualified tradespeople. They should not be allowed into homes, according to Arthur Irwin. He's with Irwin Energy Consulting Services, and he joins me on the phone this morning to tell us more. Arthur, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
How are you doing today, sir?
Not too badly.
Good. Interesting letter that you wrote to the newspaper the other day, and I'm assuming it's because that there are some of these, again, unqualified tradesmen that are doing jobs that, well, they shouldn't be.
That's right, yeah.
Tell me more about this. Who are these people, and what can we do about it?
Well, there's fly-by-nighters who are not certified, and they're out there doing work, and apparently a couple of them got caught recently. They insulated somebody's home, and then the fire inspector went in and it wouldn't approve it. They had to take it all out.
Oh, really? Wow. And that that would be a costly thing, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah. The all these insulations, they have to have what they call a flame spread rating. So you put foam in your basement wall, you have to cover it with a fireproof material. And all these trades, they should be licensed. Like for an oil burner technician, you have to be licensed. For an electrician, a plumber, refrigeration technician, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah, and as you point out, these unqualified installers, I mean, if your home's not up to code, I mean, that impacts your insurance rates, and it puts your home at risk, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, you'd have no coverage if you had a fire.
So how do we ensure that the people that we hire are indeed the people who are qualified to do the jobs we want?
Well, for instance, the oil companies, their people are all certified, or they're supposed to be. When somebody comes to your house, you could ask them for their certificate, and they should be carrying a certificate. And they also should have a copy of the code, too. I was on, for 20-some years, I was on the CSA committee on the oil burning code. And we used to have meetings once a year, and there were about 15 people on that national committee, and we'd upgrade the code to meet the newest technologies. And but if you, for example, there were a couple of insulate companies that were selling insulation that weren't certified. But if it has a CMHC label on it, it should be okay.
Hmm.
Now, if you get, if you have a product that's going in your house that you're worried about, you can contract the CCMC in Ottawa.
I have that number here. I'll pass it on. And that's the CCMC, and that stands for the Canadian Construction Materials Center.
Yeah.
And the Ottawa phone number, if people got their pens handy, it's 613-993-6189. And what will they tell you, Art?
Well, they test everything, and they can tell you what the ratings are. And it's an excellent organization. A lot of people don't know about it.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of it either until I read your letter here. And again, the Canadian Construction Materials Center in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And I'm reading here an email as we talk here from Dave, who writes that your guest is correct about funny work from contractors. He writes the building next door to him has some heat pumps on the outside. He says they don't bother me in particular, but he says I find it strange that nobody picks up on the fact that there are wires hanging on the side of the building without clips, and there are cables and pipes running on the ground where a wise person would not run a lawnmower. So is this the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, again, it's just a buyer beware, basically, and ensure that the tradespeople that you hire to either, again, install insulation or do plumbing work or electrician work, you want to ensure that they are indeed certified.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
And if they're not, then you're at risk, basically, right?
That's right. You pay your money, takes your chances.
Indeed. Well, listen, Art, I appreciate your time here this morning, and I'll put that number on again for the CCM Center in Ottawa, but I do thank you very much for your time here this morning.
Okay, nice talking to you.
You too, sir. Have a great day. Bye-bye. That's Arthur Irwin with Irwin Energy Consulting Services here in Halifax. And again, the Canadian Construction Materials Center in Ottawa, the phone number 613-993-6189. If you've got any questions or concerns, give them a call. And as Art said, they will they test the products, they give the products a rating, and they're your best bet to determine whether or not what you're buying, what you're doing, is up to code. It is coming up now to 4 minutes before 10 o'clock. We're going to break in a moment for a news update. Just looking at the very latest on the NATO summit, and it is wrapped up. In fact, U.S. President Donald Trump now on his way to Great Britain, where he'll be meeting with British Prime Minister Theresa May. But just looking here at the very latest from Canadian press that says it appears U.S. President Trump was not telling the truth at his news conference at the end of the NATO summit today. French President Emmanuel Macron is denying Trump's claim that NATO allies have agreed to boost defense spending beyond 2% of gross domestic product. Trump also told reporters in Brussels today that NATO members have agreed to increase that spending at a faster rate than the current 2024 timeline. French President Macron says the communique, though, only confirms the previous goal of 2% by 2024. He's also denying Trump's claim that he had threatened to pull the United States out of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It's not quite the ending that we saw with the G7 summit last month in Quebec, but clearly there were frictions among the NATO countries and the president of the United States. And as I mentioned, Donald Trump now off to meet with Theresa May. And then Monday of next week, he'll be having a summit in Helsinki, Finland, with the president of the Russia, Vladimir Putin. And that was another issue that the NATO allies had some concerns about, his cozying up to the Russian leader, while in the meantime he's, again, dissing the NATO allies, including Canada. And, of course, he has mentioned that Canada is among the countries. He, in fact, wrote a letter before the NATO summit urging them to increase their defense spending. Didn't quite say or else, but that was the inference, that if the other countries don't boost their spending, well, the Americans just might reconsider their role in NATO. Perhaps we'll hear some of that. Your thoughts on that issue coming up next hour. We've got an open hour for you between 10 and 11 o'clock this morning, and that means anything goes next hour, and there's lots we can talk about. Our phone lines await your calls now, in fact, at 902-405-6000 or 1-877-801-8255. Give me a call, and we'll take your calls after the news, and that is coming up next.